Hello, I'm Scott Fox. This is number 0153, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0153. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Bruce Anderson from Cyber Investigation Services, and he's on to talk about cyber attacks.
It is a huge concern. It is what keeps the FBI awake at night. This is a big problem that we're seeing going on. There are lots of companies that are being attacked and intellectual property being stolen, and a lot of times the companies don't even know that they've been in there for months, and it's a huge problem right now.
Paul J.J. Payak from Global Language Monitor talks about companies horning into Olympic advertising. It's called Olympic Ambush Competition.
BA pays over £100 million to be the official sponsor of the Olympics, and yet other airlines are taking their mindshare away, and people don't associate BA with the Olympics. They associate United with the Olympics or whatever. This is a big problem for the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, because people pay so much for the privilege of working with the Olympics that it's almost comical how far people will go to try to stop ambush marketing. The opposite actually happens. The stakes just get raised even higher.
We have another retro interview with an actor who is no longer with us, the late Werner Klemperer, who played Colonel Klink on Hogan's Heroes. How did he feel about typecasting?
People have a habit of identifying characters, particularly characters that are supposedly well-played and successful. They identify the person with the character and they can't do anything else. I mean, they feel that's Colonel Klink, that's all there is, you know, and I think that's so strange because they do know that we're all actors and we perform things that have not necessarily anything to do with us personally.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0153, was Scott Fox, the author of Click Millionaires, Work Less, Live More with an Internet Lifestyle Business You Love. And if you've been paying attention to the program, you knew that he was a guest on the show just last week talking about his new book. Scott has a lot of great internet books out there, a lot of great e-business books out there, this one being his latest. You can find out more about it by going to his website at clickmillionaires.com. And again, thank you very much, Scott, for not only being a guest last week, but doing the slate on this week's edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, you know how I feel about cats if you listen to this program often enough, so I want to share a couple of stories that deal with felines. You might say the mayor of Talkeetna, Alaska, is feline fine. That's because Mayor Stubbs is indeed a cat. Now, the kitty scratched his way onto the political scene shortly after he was born 15 years ago. At the time, residents weren't really crazy about the current mayoral candidate, so they encouraged enough people to elect Stubbs as a write-in candidate. The nearly 900 residents responded in full force, and Stubbs was elected, and that turned out to be a good thing for the town. Although his position is honorary, Stubbs' popularity is real. His election earned him enough press to catapult, get it, catapult, the town at the base of Mount McKinley, into a tourist destination. Residents say they're happy with their perfect mayor. Okay, I'll stop with the puns. And it's great to promote tourism. The general store where Stubbs hangs out says it gets dozens of tourists a day asking for him. Well, you know, clearly, history shows that Alaska is a state that would elect just about anybody. Okay, a strip club in Port Charlotte, Florida, refused to allow Everett Robert Lagus, age 47, inside. They said he was drunk. Perhaps they were alerted because he wanted to bring a kitten inside with him. You know, there's a very rude joke that is rattling around in my head when you talk about kittens and strip clubs, but I'll just leave that one alone. Anyway, in response, Everett called 911 when sheriff deputies arrived. They called him a cab when the taxi arrived. Everett refused to provide a destination or say whether he had enough money for the fare. Instead, he allegedly started yelling and calling 911 again and again, even though deputies were already right there, and refused to get out of the taxi. Deputies gave up and gave him a ride themselves to jail. He was charged with misuse of the 911 system, disorderly intoxication, trespassing after being warned to leave, and resisting arrest without violence. No word on the cat, the report concluded. You know, I think the cat is the mastermind behind all of this and was telling Everett what to do, because they prey on the weak, you know. And cats are evil, little pieces of evil, plotting mankind's demise. I keep warning everybody. I've written blog pieces about it. You're not listening, but you'll find out. And when you do, it will be too late. Anyway, we have another sighting of the Virgin Mary for you. That gal gets around. People are flocking to a tree in northern New Jersey where some say the Virgin Mary has made an appearance. Makeshift shrines have sprung up by the tree in West New York. People have been praying, crying, and leaving flowers and candles as they look at the small opening where the bark was stripped away, and some say they see the image of the Holy Mother. A fence and other barricades also have been set up around the tree to manage the crowds. As usual, the Catholic Church doesn't like it when their faithful start acting crazy, so Newark Archdiocese spokesperson Jim Goodness... Really, a person working for the Catholic Church named Goodness? Anyway, Jim Goodness said the image is likely, quote, some discoloration that resembles Our Lady of Guadalupe. You know, people see and believe what they want to see and believe. Mind you, these are probably the same people that think The Bachelor is a documentary. Anyway, moving right along, we always figured working at a kiosk at a mall wasn't the most fun job in the world, but who knew it was so dangerous? Police in Dallas say a naked man crashed a pickup truck into the Southwest Center Mall and drove through several kiosks before coming to a stop inside the Champs Sporting Goods store. Now, fortunately, this happened at around 7:30 in the morning, so nobody was there to get hurt. The driver, 35-year-old Arthur Walker, was apparently wearing only a blanket when he made his entrance into the mall. Once his truck came to a stop in the sporting goods store, he got out and began putting on clothes and a pair of Air Jordans. That little move added a nice burglary charge on top of all the reckless driving and who knows what other charges they're going to heap on this guy. There's always naked people in the stuff file. Just happens that way, I guess. And we have one more story in the Stuff File section before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. There has been some important, if not disturbing, advancements in the field of robotics. Prolific inventor Nobuhiro Takahashi of Japan has announced that he has created a silicone and foam buttocks robot that can clench, twitch, or protrude when probed. He says its use will be primarily for training proctology students to deal with patient anxiety. Now, what I want to know is, why did he say primarily rather than exclusively? I'd feel much better if he had said exclusively. I mean, just how much spare time does he have? Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? How secure is your computer? According to the National Security Administration, cyber attacks to computer infrastructures rose 44% in 2011. Bruce Anderson is a cyber crime expert and the director of investigations at Cyber Investigation Services. He joins us on the line right now from Florida. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. So when it comes to cyber attacks, do cyber attackers go primarily, first of all, after the low-hanging fruit?
Depends on which cyber attackers we're talking about, because you really have four different primary groups. So you have the script kiddies who are just kind of messing around with stuff, if you will. You have organized crime, which definitely goes after the low-hanging fruit. What they're looking for is easy ways to get into computers to be able to get information and banking information and passwords and credit card numbers and those types of things. And then you have activist groups like Anonymous and LulzSec. Then you have your state actors, you know, like Russia and China, who are going after intellectual property type of thing. So as it relates to organized crime, definitely yes.
Well, let's talk about some of those categories, and I want to start with the latter one first, state crime. How big of a concern is this, sort of like cyber espionage?
It is a huge concern. It is what keeps the FBI and awake at night, if you will, in relationship to and the National Security Administration. This is a big problem that we're seeing going on. There are lots of companies that are being attacked and intellectual property being stolen, and a lot of times the companies don't even know that they've been in there for months, and it's a huge problem right now.
I mean, we've heard stories, I mean, right here in Canada, for instance, we've heard stories of some companies and countries, rather, allegedly being within the infrastructure of some computer systems for years.
And that is definitely, possible and definitely potentially the case. A lot of the stuff that, you know, we're seeing, typically how these get found out is not by the people that have been hacked. It's by customers or, you know, someone that has stumbled across the fact that something wasn't right. And then when they looked into it and dug backwards, they found out that, you know, these hackers have been in there for 6-9 months. At least, if you will. And so it is a real issue. And if you think about it, it's easier to steal the information than spend all the money in R&D and marketing and everything else that you got to do, and then you can beat your competitor to the market.
So for most of us, for the general population, what is the most common form of cyber attack?
The most common forms of cyber attacks that we're seeing and escalating and rise is actually what I would call reputational assassination, if you will, of individuals and corporations by folks that are ex-customers, ex-partners, ex-spouses, ex-something, or competitors. So we see a lot of that going on. We also see a lot of fraud and identity theft and that kind of stuff happening online.
Okay, so the first thing you talked about, where somebody tries to damage your reputation?
That's correct.
How exactly do they do that? And most importantly, is what they're doing actually a crime?
It's not a crime, but it is definitely a civil infraction, which can cost them a lot of money and a lot of grief, if you will, if you get caught doing it. And a lot of people, you know, put it under the aspect of free speech, but there's a place where free speech ends. But how they do it is that if I, under anonymity of some name in my bedroom one evening, and I decide that I want to put out something about your company or about you individually or your reputation, and I want to spread it all over the world, and, you know, the first 20 pages of Google that you're a goofball, a thief, a liar, a cheat, a pedophile, whatever it is I want to label you, it will cause great damage to that company, and we see it every day.
Okay, so you say it's not a crime to do that. Should it be, and are people working towards it becoming a crime?
I don't see any move at all towards it becoming a crime. In fact, we're seeing just the opposite, is where, you know, and again, it's a delicate issue of free speech and privacy versus, you know, when do you cross the line and you defame somebody and you harm them financially and, you know, destroy their entire companies and businesses. And so right now it's still the wild, wild west as to how the courts are landing in this. But, you know, we have teamed with, top 100 law firm and we're doing great things in relationship to getting this stuff really stopped.
What can people do to protect themselves from being the target of a cybercrime? And a follow-up to that is, what can you do once you discovered you have been the target of a cybercrime?
Well, it again depends on the type of cybercrime as it relates to, things that organized crime do and whatnot. A lot of them are utilizing, and again, they do mass phishing attacks where, you know, they'll send you a link or they'll send you to a website or a picture or that type of thing that is malicious, and then ultimately they wind up owning your computer. And so you need to have the right, you know, keep your computers patched up and up to date, keep your browsers patched up and up to date, utilize, the latest malware with that, and then be real careful about where you're going, what you're visiting, what you're doing, and that will help against a lot of those different types of attacks. Is in terms of identity theft and some of the other issues, is a lot of times it's real difficult because you've got people that are sitting in restaurants and they'll grab your credit card and copy down the numbers, and then they'll go use it that way. And so most of the other types of cyber crimes, that it happens when it happens to you, and then you need to respond very quickly to that regardless of what the type of cyber crime is.
And correct me if I'm wrong, there are some cyber criminals out there who don't even want to do something to you per se. They want your computer. They want to control your computer so they can commit other crimes unbeknownst to the person who has that computer.
Yeah, these is what is known as botnets, and in the botnets, what they wind up doing is owning and controlling millions of computers. And with that, as you said, they can use it as a pivot point to attack somebody else. They can a lot of these attacks that you've seen is the like a DDoS attacks of trying to take down MasterCard or some business or some website. This is how they do it, is because all of a sudden they just flood it with massive inquiries from all these different computers, and it just floods the system and takes the site down. And so that is a form of an attack that some of these groups use to make a point and or hold your account hostage, or basically pay us money and we'll put your site back online. And so those are some things that they're doing with that. And like I said, the other is that they can leverage it to go commit a crime and make it look like you did it. And next thing you know, FBI is knocking on your door, and you didn't have a clue.
And just recently, there was a situation where there was the scare that for some people, with their DNS, their entire system was going to go down because the FBI was shutting down a particular server that they had been investigating for some time. Are there investigations like that going on all the time that we're unaware of?
Yes, yes. There are a lot of cyber issues going on, and a lot of cyber crime. Incidents going on that the feds and police and folks like us are investigating, and people don't know they're being investigated until after the fact, because you can't really publicize it too much, or else you don't stand a prayer and catch any people behind it.
And the fact that it was publicized, I mean, we in the media made a big story about it in the last couple of weeks. It kind of reminded me of, on a smaller scale, back in the days of the Y2K scare.
Right.
The fact that a lot of people. Most people didn't have an issue. When we come out with these stories, does it have the negative effect that, it's a Chicken Little kind of situation and people keep their guard down?
Well, I think there was a lot more made of that particular incident than what it was made out to be. And, yeah, I think, we've got to be careful in what we publicize and what we talk about. The other side of it is you got a right to, people have the right to know what's going on. And I knew about that particular attack well back in November of last year, due to our connects with with different groups that to know what's going on in these types of investigations. And that was actually a very, very successful investigation and joint investigation with Estonia, with the FBI and the U.S. Justice Department.
So quick final questions. People don't have to be necessarily paranoid, but they do have to learn to protect themselves a little better, right?
You have to be aware. And to put it in an offline is that, if you go to the wrong neighborhoods and do the wrong things, wrong clothes and hang dollar bills out your pocket, odds are you're going to get robbed, and you just have to be aware of the things that you need to do online in order to try to help keep yourself safe. There's no way to stay 100% safe, but you can certainly mitigate a lot of it. And a lot of the incidences, where people have gotten hacked into, there were things that they could have done that were simple things, reasonably simple things to avoid those attacks.
And people can find out more information about what you do and what they need to know by going to the website cyberinvestigationservice.com, correct?
Cyberinvestigationservices.com.
Services.com. I thank you very, very much, Bruce, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you.
Bruce Anderson from Cyber Investigation Services. You can visit Bruce's website at cyberinvestigationservices.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0153, and you'll find links to Bruce's site.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for now and forever, unless the Mayans were right.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to Paul J.J. Payak from Global Language Monitor. He's always a fun guest. He's on to talk about Olympic ambush competition. We'll talk a little bit about that. And we have another retro interview, an actor, a star who is no longer with us, Werner Klemperer, better known as Colonel Klink from Hogan's Heroes, an interview we did, oh, so many years ago. That's coming up a little later on as well. Plus, of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day and lots more Stuff File news on the Stuff File program, a program that is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Now, according to a new survey conducted by the travel search site Skyscanner, the number one thing that offends passengers on airlines is the sight of butt crack due to ill-fitting clothes, careless bending over, or, in some cases, on purpose. The fleshy phenomenon was regarded as even more distasteful to fellow passengers than sweat stains on clothing, beer bellies on display, and offensive logos on T-shirts. Other flying fashion faux pas were white socks and sandals, ladies in low-cut tops, and men with hairy chests on display. The survey was taken after an American woman was refused entry to a Southwestern Airlines flight because staff thought her exposed cleavage was inappropriate. Remember when people used to dress up to go on a plane? When I was a kid, it was like going to church. You looked your best. Kind of miss those days. People had more class. Call me elitist, but now airlines are just Greyhound in the sky. Anyway, a chew on this. A thief in Nanaimo, British Columbia, presumably hungry, stole some sandwiches from a 7-Eleven convenience store. There was one problem. They weren't real sandwiches. They were plastic reproductions. The hungry heist happened last week around 3 a.m. when the man accused of the crime went into the store and allegedly attempted to steal two breakfast sandwiches. Sadly for him, the sandwiches were actually plastic sales props worth about $70 each, but not edible. When the starving suspect realized the sandwiches were fake, he reportedly tossed one across the street and pocketed the other, according to Nanaimo's Bulletin newspaper. Police traced the suspect to a nearby hotel where he gave back the pilfered plastic, and since both items were returned undamaged, the owner of the 7-Eleven declined to press charges. You know, if the 7-Eleven had pressed charges, the thief would have received sandwiches that were almost edible in jail. Okay, it's official. President Obama is now being blamed for everything. In Rochester, New York, 49-year-old Anthony Parry was arrested for allegedly inappropriately touching children's feet, but he claimed he's being framed, that the whole thing was set up by President Obama. According to court documents, Parry removed a child's shoe, fondled her foot, and pressed it up against his nose and mouth at a library. Library staff called police. Investigators say Parry touched the feet of two young girls for the purpose of sexual gratification. But Parry pleaded not guilty and claims the accusations are part of a conspiracy. He said, "I'm being set up by President Barack Obama and the city and federal government." Police are currently investigating five similar cases that occurred in two other nearby cities to see if there's any connection to Parry. Parry has two prior convictions for attempted murder and assault dating back to the early and late 1980s. Frighteningly delusional. And speaking of frighteningly delusional, a naked man, there's another naked story coming up, a naked man with a bow and arrows has been taken into custody after a brief standoff with Kansas City police. Police responded to a report that a naked man was knocking on a neighbor's door. When police arrived, the man went inside a house and refused to come out, but then shot an arrow out of the window toward the area where the officers were hiding. Police called for backup, and tactical officers surrounded the house for about an hour before the man came out and was subdued with a taser. I wonder if this guy is blaming the president, too. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, many of our American friends might not be familiar with the delectable candy treat that we experience here in Canada. Two Seattle men say they spent more than 2 hours in a detention center at the Canadian border after U.S. border agents discovered illegal chocolate eggs in their car. Yep, chocolate eggs. Brandon Liu and Christopher Sweeney said they decided to bring home some treats for friends and family during a recent trip to Vancouver. They bought Kinder Eggs. Those are chocolate eggs. To you American friends, those are chocolate eggs with a toy inside, but they were stopped by border guards who said the eggs are illegal in the United States because young children could choke on the small plastic toys. Sweeney says the bust was a waste of his time and the agent's time. The men eventually got off with a warning. Yes, those heinous Canadian chocolate treats. We Canadians have to be watched more closely. Phew, that breach of security was a close call. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. The Olympics will soon start in London, so let's talk about the Olympic ambush competition, which is currently underway. Now, I'm not talking about some sort of terrorist plot. I'm talking about non-affiliated marketers who horn in on the advertising. The folks at the Global Language Monitor have been tracking the Olympic ambush competition. Paul J.J. Payak is on with us once again. He's on the line from Austin, Texas. Hi, Paul.
How are you doing today?
Fine. Thanks for being on the program with us once again.
Oh, love it.
So who exactly are these Olympic ambush people?
Well, what we do is, since Beijing, we've been tracking who exactly is getting the mind share from the Olympics. Okay, so you all know McDonald's is a sponsor of the Olympics, but are they getting all the mind share about food and everything when it's associated with the Olympics? Or, for example, BA pays over £100 million to be the official sponsor of the Olympics, and yet other airlines are taking their mindshare away, and people don't associate BA with the Olympics. They associate united with the Olympics or whatever. And so this is a big problem in the for the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, and the London Committee, which is called the LOGOC, because people pay so much for the privilege of working with the Olympics that it's a real, it's almost like comical how far they are. It's almost comical how far people will go to try to stop ambush marketing. The opposite actually happens. The stakes just get raised even higher.
Okay, so let's use the airline example as one. You mentioned that the official airline is BA, British Airways.
Right.
And that people seem to be associating United with the Olympics. First of all, what is United doing that gets them unofficially associated?
Well, that's the thing. Now, we call it non-affiliated marketers, okay? Because some marketers are very deftly, trying to manipulate themselves into the Olympic spotlight, doing everything they can. You know, like a famous example is Red Bull. Red Bull is always in the spotlight, if it's a sponsor or not. It might sponsor a small segment. It might name a venue after them. I mean, they always get in the spotlight, okay? And so what happens is that you have something. So a non-affiliated marketer can also just be a company like United that really isn't doing anything to focus on the Olympics, but for some reason, people have it as a way. It's connected in people's minds with Olympics and global travel and things of that nature. With BA, we find out that Air France and United both exceed BA in references toward the Olympics.
So is it possible that it's not necessarily, as in the case with the airlines, as you just described, not necessarily something that the airlines are doing to get their name out there, even though they're not necessarily officially affiliated with the Olympics? Could it be just something that BA is not doing properly to capitalize on their official affiliation?
Yeah, you know, that does seem to be a way to look at it. I mean, first of all, in marketing, nothing just happens, right? Marketing is a science. People spend billions of dollars to figure out how to market the airlines or the hamburgers or the cereal or your toothpaste. And so nothing just happens. It's all backed by data and things like that. But you're right, it can be things that are not being done. Now, it's kind of hard not to affiliate BA with London and the Olympics, but that's what's happening. And what we do is we measure the Olympics and then the brands that are for each of the different categories. So we have British Air, and then you have who are the main competitors with British Air in people's minds, and then how do those competitors fare when they're connected, and this is on a global internet and social media, et cetera, with London 2012. And it's just really amazing to see what happens. In fact, in a study we just released, and what we say is that the competition is full bore right now, even though it's still 10 days before the official competition starts. The ambush marketing competition has been going on for quite a while. That right now, of the top 50 brands associated with the Olympics, 33 are ambush marketers.
Wow. Now, you say you've been tracking this basically since Beijing, which is not that long ago, and still within the realm of time that we've had social media. So is social media part of a bigger problem as far as the IOC is concerned? Is that making their job more difficult to kind of rein this in, even if they can?
Well, that's the thing. Everybody thinks they can rein in social media, but the idea is if China can't rein it in, the IOC can't rein it in, right? The genie's out of the bottle, and social media is, and the whole internet basically is from the ground up, right? You don't dictate what's on the internet; it's the people decide what's on the internet, and then it moves up. And so it's a whole different field to track what's going on in the people. And we find out that, like, traditionally, people would actually, you know, go out and ask people, and it's like exit polls, right? You know, the exit polls are never quite right, and even the polling is never quite right because, you know, you have one poll, and they factor it for people they consider likely voters, and then another one that is underrepresented by Democrats, so they add 8% to the Democratic side or the Republican side or whatever. And so the polls are never exact. What we try to do is track what's actually being said and written in the world and looking there and then making our judgments from that. Nobody's asking a question. You can't say, I'm not voting for President Obama because X, Y, or Z. Either you're voting for him or not. You can't change your opinion in the poll. It's what's actually being said and how it adds up.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the advertisers that are out there. Some of the official advertisers you mentioned, BA, British Airways. There's people like Cadbury, BMW, Panasonic, Coca-Cola, one of the bigger ones. Visa is another one. Those are somewhat recognizable. People, I think, are kind of familiar with the idea that they're totally associated with the Olympics. But who's usurping some of their power? Just like you mentioned, United seems to be taking away some of the thunder from BA. Who's taking some of the thunder away from some of those companies I just described?
Well, let's say Coca-Cola. Okay, Red Bull is taking some thunder, right, as a drink, right? Red Bull in that category is taking thunder, and Pepsi is taking the thunder. Okay, and so when we do our analysis, we'll see that there's a certain, you know, the overwhelming majority would be Ambushers rather than Coca-Cola, okay? And then Coca-Cola always has a predominant share, but, you know, thinking that Pepsi shouldn't have any share. They're not sponsoring anything with the Olympics, but that's not how it works. In the mind of people, they're still there. And another example is that we have, as one of the top Olympic sponsors right now, British Telephone, right? BT, the BT group. But even though they're one of the top Olympic sponsors at number 13 overall, cable and wireless and Deutsche Telekom are both higher than them. So even the top official sponsor, according to our ranking, is secondary to Deutsche Telekom and cable and wireless.
Now,
it's amazing.
Are these companies becoming aware of this fact, and is that going to be problematic for the IOC in the future when somebody says, well, wait a minute, I'm not necessarily getting the bang for my buck when I become an official sponsor and somebody who's not usurps my image or my place as far as imagery is concerned?
Right, and that's why it's such a big concern. Because when you sponsor a top-level sponsor, okay, there's 25 top-level sponsors. There's hundreds of other sponsors, okay? But we're talking about what they call the TOP, the top Olympic partners, okay? And that they pay a minimum of 100 million pounds a year, or 100 billion pounds for the sponsorship. And then our estimate is that they probably pay about half a billion pounds over the course of the 4 years, because it's an ongoing thing. And most of the sponsors are sponsors throughout the next 3, 4, 5 Olympiads, you know, the summer, winter, youth games, things of that nature. So it's an ongoing thing. And so, yes, the IOC is very aware. We're aware of different studies that they've had in reaction to what we've said, actually, where they come out and they do different type of tests to show people that the sponsorship is worth a lot. And, of course, it is. It's worth a lot in terms of goodwill and associating with a healthy thing, et cetera. But I think how the IOC is handling it is kind of interesting, because they've got, you know, the brand police out there, you know, checking on mom-and-pop stores that, you know, it doesn't say Olympic ice cream when it said Olympic ice cream for the last 500 years, right? And, you know, but it doesn't matter, because it's like now they can't say it, you know, for the duration of the games. And it's like, it's kind of like misappropriated.
Okay, so very...
You know, it's like focusing on the wrong spot.
Okay, so very quickly, the idea of somebody ambushing Olympic advertising is not something they can do cheaply. It's not like they're doing it for free. They're spending some money too, are they not?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. The Olympics are like one of the prime platforms of civilization right now. I mean, they are a predominant activity that happens, like the World Cup, where the whole globe is focused on this one event or a series of events for a couple of weeks every other year, you know, being summer, winter, et cetera, but like the World Cup and things of that nature. And so the stakes are very high, and people are paying dearly for it to be associated in any way they can. So even if they're ambushing, or like we say, non-affiliated. They don't have to be doing anything nefarious. They can just be very clever in their marketing, like Subway. People well known about Subway. That Subway is not a sponsor, but they're up there because they have Michael Phelps and other Olympians, you know, eating their sandwiches all year long, and no one ever says the Olympics, but the association is there just by the image.
Okay. People can find out more information about this by going to the website, languagemonitor.com, where they'll find information and also the list of those who are official sponsors and those who are not, correct?
Yes. All that information is there. We have a series of stories and background. It goes back to Vancouver, and Vancouver was very interesting, that the Canadian, the House of Parliament, passed different regulations that you couldn't use the word snow and winter and 20 in the same sentence. That was against the rule, and it's like, you got to be kidding me. This is Canada, and you can't say 20. Like, we're going to have 20 inches of snow, you know, in a story. That could be frowned upon because you're infringing upon the words that they use for official sponsoring.
Paul, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much for talking with us once again.
Okay, love to be here. Bye-bye.
Paul J.J. Payak from Global Language Monitor. Again, you can visit their website at www.languagemonitor.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0153, and you'll find links to Paul's website. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. The largest manufacturer of portable gas cans in America is going out of business. It supplied the military during World War II and literally helped fuel the Allied victory. Today, its red plastic containers are used by millions of homeowners to fill their lawnmowers. But, sadly, it's shutting down, and 117 people are losing their jobs. The company says it just can't afford the lawsuits anymore. In one case, it was sued by a man who tried to start a fire in his wood-burning stove by using their can to pour gas on the fire. There were clear warnings on the can to keep it away from flames, but a jury still handed down a $4 million verdict. What has happened to personal responsibility? Let's be fair. Because of lawsuits like this, products are plastered with warnings. But there's one thing that probably won't be stamped on the next gas can you buy. Made in America. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
This is The Stuff File.
It's time for another retro interview with a celebrity that is no longer with us. This time around, it's a chat I had back in June of 1996. This was a star who grew up in Europe, in a musical family, but became best known for playing a bumbling German on television. I'm talking about Werner Klemperer, who will forever be remembered as the POW camp commandant, Colonel Klink, on the CBS sitcom Hogan's Heroes. At the time that we spoke, Hogan's Heroes was still going strong in syndication 30 years after it first aired. Here is part of that interview now.
I'd like to know a little bit about your portrayal in that particular television show. The fact that here we are 30 years later talking about a show that admittedly was a big hit. You won two Emmys for it. But 30 years later, they're still talking about it. Did you think that was possible when you did that show back then?
Well, I don't know whether we thought that was possible at the time, but we knew we had a good thing. We didn't actually quite know how long it would run. We knew when we did the pilot that we had every chance of getting on the air. And I wasn't too surprised at most of the rerun market, but I will tell you that in the last few years, it's really been, particularly in the States, the reruns have been very powerful because of this five-day-a-week deal on all the local stations, and it seems as if we will keep getting a new audience all the time.
Well, the thing that's very surprising is in this day of political correctness, one would question whether a show like this could actually get on the air today.
That may be your question. It isn't mine.
You don't think so?
No. I think the show has to be taken exactly for what it is. Why should Hogan's Heroes not be on the air? It's obviously a satirical parody, and it can only be looked at it that way.
When I mean by not being on there, I don't mean in its current form of reruns and shows that were done 30 years ago. I'm saying if someone were to mount a show like this in today, a new show.
You mean when you mean a show like this, you have to say to me, a show exactly like this, the way it was done.
Yeah.
Would be a smash hit again, in my opinion.
You think it would be?
Yes, well, of course.
Why is that?
Because it is a satire. Mm-hmm. It is not a... You cannot take Hogan's Heroes, look at it and take it totally seriously. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Are you surprised? Because one of the things that caught my attention was the story that was in the Wall Street Journal last month at its current success now in Germany.
I'm very surprised at that, yes, because... there were many chances for it to be in Germany once the syndication market started, and it continually just did not happen. And the fact that it happened now is somewhat surprising to me, but I must tell you I'm pleased about it because I think it should have been there a long time ago.
One of the things that I guess a lot of people might not be aware of, especially those who are fans of the show over the years and have seen your portrayal in it, is the nature of your background and the many things you've done besides Colonel Klink. You're a classically trained actor.
I'm an actor by profession. I should hope that I'd have, you know, a varied background.
Yeah. I mean, you're a classically trained actor, and sometimes people who watch a role like Colonel Klink might not necessarily think of the actor portraying that in other things, but you have had a varied career, including working with symphony orchestras, correct?
Yes. Well, you know, we have a... when I say we, I include all of us, not just Americans, but I suppose Canadians, too. People have a... To me, it's very difficult to understand, but they have a habit of identifying characters, particularly characters that are supposedly well-played and successful, they identify the person with the character and they can't do anything else. I mean, they feel that's Colonel Klink, that's all there is. You know, and I think that's so strange because they do know that we're all actors and we perform things that have not necessarily anything to do with us personally.
What about the situation about typecasting? Was that a concern when you first did the show?
Not only was it a concern... for the first couple of years, we had a choice to make, and that is, do I accept offers for roles that were not Colonel Klink, but they were the same kind of character, mm-hmm. Or do I stay away from that in order to, you know, remove as much of the image as possible and continue my work? And I decided on the latter. Because I thought that was better for my career as an actor, and I may have lost a bunch of money because of it, but it was worth the trip to me.
Going back again to the satire angle of the television show,
yes.
There are some people who, for lack of a better term, don't have a sense of humor about these types of things. And I'm just curious to know if you got any flack, particularly being from Germany yourself, being of Jewish extraction, have any flack for playing Colonel Klink because of your personal background?
Well, that's actually the very thing that I just mentioned to you, the fact that I have such a problem that people, that has to, you know, be on people's mind what my personal background is. To me, to be very frank with you, is a totally irrelevant thing. The only thing that they, in my opinion, people should care about is whether they liked my performance or not. And so, you know, I find that so difficult. As a matter of fact, little do people know that most of the leading members of the cast have a background that they would never expect them to have and play the show they did. As an example, Robert Clary, the little Frenchman, when he was a very, very young man, he was spent quite a while, he was in a concentration camp. He has a number branded on his arm. So all people, the man who played Sergeant Schultz, his whole family was gassed. So a lot of us have historical, you know, events that took place in our lives. But that... It's so difficult for me to understand that a person would stop and say, God, how could he play a part like that? My job is to be an actor, and as long as it has, you know, decent taste, I should portray anything, no matter how ugly it is or how pretty it is.
Well, you certainly have had a run with Colonel Klink. You even had a chance to revive him in The Simpsons. What was that like doing
it? That was, you know, I actually swore to myself privately I'm never going to, you know, do anything with that character again on television. But when they offered this little situation for me to do this voice in this special segment, I found it so incredibly humorous that I said yes, and I enjoyed it. It was fun.
And your other work, I know you've worked in narration.
I'm very blessed to be involved as an actor, a narrator in with symphonic pieces that, and I go and work with most of the major symphonies. I've worked in Canada, worked with the Montreal Symphony, I've worked with the Toronto Symphony, as a narrator, meaning a speaker. There are pieces. There's a whole repertoire of pieces for the spoken voice with orchestra, and I do a lot of that.
Does this bring you back full circle in a way to...
Of course, I've been asked that question before, and it's a good question. In a way, I guess there's sort of a circle because of my dad and my genuine love for classical music. There's something very pleasing about that. But also, as an actor, it's a medium that's very interesting. In other words, to be able to work like a liaison between audience and orchestra, and with the spoken voice, create an atmosphere. That's an interesting acting challenge. And more importantly, it keeps me in front of an audience as a what's called a live actor, meaning not film or tape, and that to me is the essence of my work anyway.
Well, I'm glad we had this opportunity. We should mention the fact that your father was Otto Klemperer, who was a famed conductor in his own right.
Yes.
I'm glad, even though we were doing a program dealing slightly with political correctness, that we had a chance to at least catch up with you and find out what you were doing, and because I'm sure a lot of fans are glad to hear from you.
It's very nice of you to have called me.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
That was part of an interview with actor Werner Klemperer from June of 1996. Klemperer died in New York of cancer on December 6, 2000. He was 80. His ashes were scattered at sea.
The Stuff File.
And we have time for just one more item on the Stuff File program. That, of course, would be the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A man was in a grocery store in Oakland Park, Florida, when an employee allegedly saw him hiding 3 packs of meat in his pants. The employee notified a manager and followed him out of the store. A passerby, Joseph Patrick, noticed what was going on and yelled at the thief to stop. Now, according to the police report, the shoplifter backed up his car and ran over Patrick's foot, knocking him down. After driving a bit, he stopped, still in view of the witnesses, and removed his license plate and tossed it aside, and then continued his escape. Police simply recovered the license plate and used it to identify the shoplifter as Richard Homer Smith, age 56. He was arrested on charges of petty theft, failing to stop and remain at an accident involving injury, and improper backing. Now, why would someone who just stole meat by stuffing it down his pants take the time to remove his license plate after running over someone's foot and just toss it away where the cops could easily find it after witnesses in plain view saw him put it there? One reason, and one reason only, he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0153. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0153. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCore in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Any rebroadcast of this copywritten program in whole or in part without the express written consent of... Oh, God, who the hell are we kidding? Who's going to steal this show? God, who writes this stuff? Holder, what a kidder.